What is the biggest difference between what's really happening versus what's being said online?
I mean, look no further than the most powerful man on the planet.
Strangulation marks and just bruises everywhere.
People only gonna listen to me while I'm standing next to him.
You know, I done been in a domestic violence situation, and it's easier said than done.
Like, one of the predicate acts of the racketeering conspiracy is that arson.
They're very strategic about who can be yelling at a witness, you know, and how that's perceived.
It's an absolute clown. All right, now we've warmed things up a bit. Now let's get into what this case really reveals about power, fame, and the culture that protects it. I've got a couple of questions for y'all. We're gonna jump right into the topic of the week. Now, James, I wanna know, do powerful men seem to keep escaping accountability? Is it about money, legal teams, or public sympathy?
Well, that's a very loaded question. Here's what I will say to that. I would say in recent years, I would say in the last 5 years or so, it seems like powerful men that have been accused of wrongdoing in whatever world that they live in are being held accountable now more than perhaps they ever were before. So I think there's been a seismic change in that, you know, over the last few years. And you can start with Me Too and, you know, follow that. So I think things are changing in that respect, without question. I mean, look no further than the most powerful man on the planet, the President of the United States. He's been convicted of crimes. He's been charged with crimes. He's been sued by women, and he's been found liable for different things. I mean, it doesn't need to go any further than that.
Yeah.
Now, Silver, I want to know this. Do you think that women get discredited just because of who they've dated or how the public sees them?
If I am dating a powerful man, I'm only relevant while I'm dating the powerful man. Mm-hmm. Once I'm done with the man is done with me, then my power as his woman goes away. So people only gonna listen to me while I'm standing next to him. My voice might be a voice, but it ain't gonna be as loud when I'm standing next to him as it is if I'm across the room and I'm not standing with him. So of course, they definitely getting discredited, and it's even, people are gonna protect the stronger man. The number one thing when it comes to being a man is their strength, and the stronger the man, the stronger you respect them and you view them. And the one thing about your respect is you don't wanna lose that for that person. So when it comes to somebody tainting that, you gonna put that in the dirt just to make sure that the respect that this person has grown is gonna stay there. And a lot of people hold that for that strong person in power.
Mm. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Sam, I wanna know, since you've been inside this courtroom, mm-hmm. what is the biggest difference between what's really happening versus what's being said online?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, there's a huge difference, and it's been a whole big lesson for me in just deciphering what is rumors and what is real. And the way I feel, honestly, it's almost like people tell stories over hundreds of years. You know, if there were 10 men and we got into a fight and it was, you know, it was 10 of us and there was 100 of them, and then another 100 years, well, there was only 5 of us and there was 400 men. And we, you know, like, it's just, a lot of it has become folklore, and the reality of it's like, we were this huge monster. And then you get in the courtroom and you're like, well, this doesn't seem as scary. And like I said, where is all of Hollywood connected to this? There's no mention. So it's just like, I think that's the biggest myth, is that all these celebrities and that there were these huge sex parties. I thought what Diddy was guilty of was that he had these big sex parties, filmed people in compromising positions, and used those films to blackmail them to get ahead in his business endeavors. And there's none of that there.
Very interesting. Ariel, I want to know, is social media, in your opinion, helping victims tell their truth? Or is it just creating a new kind of a public trial or scrutiny? What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's creating a new public trial because nobody is actually going to the police They're going straight to a lawyer's office. If you put your hands on me, you're going to jail. Like, I'm calling the police first. As soon as you ball up your fist, the police are already on the phone. So it's just, and after the whole Me Too thing with the whole R. Kelly thing, it's just like now all of a sudden everybody's a victim now. Like, they can have sex with a celebrity and, oh, I have been sexually harassed. Even though they could be pursuing this person, but because social media is a big thing now, I can go have sex with an NBA player and then get on my Instagram tomorrow and say, yep, he touched me inappropriately, even though I said that because of this whole Me Too movement thing. And I feel like it's just not fair, especially protecting this our Black men. It's like, and y'all ain't asking for $20. Y'all going to $50 million.
And it's interesting. It's interesting. That is, to me, that's a great point. I think that there needs to be, no matter what the race of the person is, I don't care if it's a Black man, a white man, I don't care what the race is. I think there needs to be certain guidelines that are put in play for if a victim comes forward and they speak in a private setting before it goes public, certain criteria that has yes. to be proven and established before trying to go into a trial online.
Yeah.
For instance, when that joke of an attorney, and yes, I will say that with my head high, Bugsby or whatever his name is,
Tony,
he is an absolute clown, came at the Carter family, embarrassed Blue, embarrassed their family, and thank God, you know, Sean Carter, Jay-Z could have been terrified with everything that's going on with Diddy to say, oh, I can't even fight this, pay them. And it would have enabled, and it would have been a situation where people would have been like, that's perfect. That's perfect. That's all you got to do is accuse them. And they fold because they don't want to deal with what the outcome is going to be of just being accused. Mm-hmm. So I think that as important as it is to protect victims, as important as it is to hold people accountable for their actions, it is just as important to have some type of expectations or criteria or some type of system in place where you legitimize the claims of a victim before destroying the career and public views of a man, no matter what his race is.
Right. And I mean, even so, I mean, how many white women have lied on a Black man and ruined their careers, ruined their lives, and then you find out years later that it didn't really happen and that we should believe victims. We should believe women, but I think, like you're saying, there needs to be some things in place to protect everyone involved, because it is very easy to claim something like that and ruin somebody's life, you know.
Yeah, and that can go way back to Emmett Till.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. A white woman lied,
right.
Said he was, you know, and then he lost his life. And then years later, you come out and say, that never happened, but this baby is gone.
Right.
Mm.
And you died, and his mama died without justice for the fact of a lie. So it goes back way further than just what's happening right now. And that's what's really hard to, you know, try to believe that, okay, this happened to you. Because now we just like, ugh.
Right.
We don't
know.
You
need to have proof. You need to, you need to prove it.
Yeah, there's a lot of history involved there.
Yes.
I want to say one thing to all of your points, which are all very valid and very important. There was a case many years ago, a decade or more, that involved a group of young men that were students at Duke University. And they were, I want to say, lacrosse players. And there was an allegation that they had a party and that they had a female entertainer come to the party. And it was, by all accounts, you know, a regular party. The young lady, the woman, made allegations that she was raped, assaulted, whatever the allegations were. There was a district attorney, if I recall correctly, that prosecuted these young men. Ultimately, they were expelled from Duke University. I think they were, you know, I don't know what happened with respect to the criminal case, but their lives were ruined. And many years later, we find out that the young lady fabricated portions of the story or changed her story. If I remember all of the details correctly. And I think that the district attorney may have even been aware of some of this. And again, I don't have all of the facts, but if I remember that correctly, they were exonerated. And I think the young lady may have ultimately been prosecuted, and the district attorney may have had some challenges with his career. So at the end of the day, I agree with Ra's point. You need to look at what the facts are. There needs to be facts if you're going to criminally charge somebody, or if you are going to civilly sue somebody and attempt to ruin their reputation or take away their freedom. And if you are unsuccessful, there should be consequences for bringing forth false allegations. And then that behavior will stop. But I do want to say this, and this can't get lost in any of this discussion. People that are victims of sexual abuse, domestic violence, anything like that, they should always come forward. They should always report it to authorities. They should always do all of that, because people, no matter who the, you know, alleged accusers are, should not get away with victimizing people like that. So victims should always feel comfortable coming forward. But opportunists that we're talking about here, or that perception, I think the system needs to look at that a little differently. And to your point regarding Jay-Z, that was absolutely horrible. It was, I mean, I'm getting a news alert on my phone when that's happening. And it's like, oh my God, you know, him too. You know, we have me too. It's him too. And it turns out that none of that was accurate. And here's somebody with a reputation that could have been besmirched. There's probably people out there that believed that he was involved in these things, and it wasn't true.
I mean, everybody believed it.
And that's unfortunate. That's very unfortunate.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate for his family.
I mean, for that 24 to 48 hours, Jay-Z was done. They all believed that he had been in a room and with a 13-year-old, and that him and Diddy, and it just goes to show you how, like you said, the court of public opinion on social media is so dangerous, you know?
And it went on a little bit long. It was the 2 days, but it went on a little bit longer than that, because he had to go back and forth with the attorney, put out statements, and you saw thousands of people like, yeah, okay, you're just like Diddy, the same type of situation. Yeah. And that was, can you imagine how much sleep he lost, what his wife went through, what his child went through, that what their family went through? It's really not fair.
Right.
Now I want to move on a little bit. Let's talk about silence, right? And if people knew, without blaming the victim, why does it take lawsuits for someone to say something out loud? Why, right? Cassie left Diddy. She moved on. She got married. She has three beautiful children. She reaches out to him, threatens to sue him. He doesn't give her the money that she's demanding. She goes and files a lawsuit. He pays the money. We know that from the courtroom. No, Samson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, she got $20 million.
And now, obviously, it's not in her power anymore, because what some people don't know is that once you accuse someone of this type of crime, whether you say you're going to testify or not anymore, the DA, it's now their case, because you said it happened.
Right.
So let's say he would have given her the money when she initially went to him about it. Is it now she wasn't a victim anymore? Now it's okay? How do we not talk about that? Tell me my question without me. I'm so blown away by all of this. But why do you think it takes people?
Because I would have told after the first pee. Like, you peed on me. I would have told that day. You ain't got to wait 10 years for me to tell you done peed on me. And then you done paid somebody else to pee on me. Like, I just don't.
I mean, with her. She said that happened often.
And it's like, you can be in love, and I get it. You know, I done been in a domestic violence situation, and it's easier said than done, like walking away, because you just don't know when he's coming back, if he's going to target your next person. Mm. So it's easier to stay until you have that stability to leave.
Right. Mm.
And
you're someone who raves about telling. Did you do it for yourself? Oh, baby.
But let me tell you something. I live in Jacksonville. So every time I did call the police, and I'm a firm witness of this, they do not care unless you die. Mm. They do not care unless something happens. Wow. And I have called, even when my house was shot up, I have called the police to say, hey, I'm 8 months pregnant. He shot up my house.
You got that good work, huh?
You know, Harry Tubman. But I have called the police several times, even when he have done stuff to me. And you know what they told me? It's either I could take both of y'all to jail, because even though you're protecting yourself, it's still a domestic dispute. Or he can, you know, there's nothing that we can do because he still have stuff here. So you steady have to be abused. And that's how I felt until it was to a point where he almost killed me. And that's when they did something. Mm. So now he has 8 years in prison because of that. But it had to be to a point where I had to almost, like, I had to come out with strangulation marks and just bruises everywhere for them to be like, okay, we're taking you to jail.
And I'm very sorry to hear that you went through that. That's awful.
Yeah.
I have a question, because I didn't know that you were in a relationship like that. And I'm very sorry to even hear that.
Oh, it's okay.
Were you, and I'm not victim shaming, please.
No, I'm
asking this question to understand. Were you, after he was physical with you, did you continue to be intimate with him and to love him and to be with him ultimately after?
Yes, because, you know, as a woman, we do not want a broken household, especially when you're coming from a mom when you didn't have a dad. So the thing when it comes to kids, like, I have kids with you. So, yeah, like, okay, the abuse was awful, but it's like, dang, I got to make sure that I'm making my kids happy too. Like, yeah, I can walk away, but I almost think about my children's sake, like, they're going to miss their dad, so let me open the door. Mm. That's how it had to be until it got to a point where I was miserable, I was depressed, and I'm just making them happy, and they need a mama that's happy too. So I just had to stand up, and, like, if I had to fight, I had to fight, and it got to that point where I finally got away. And then, of course, I had to, you know, he burnt my house down, all that stuff, before I was able to get away, but that's usually what happens in a domestic violence. You just don't want him to take it to the next level. And in Diddy case, Cassie case, he was going after everybody in her family, the mama. Was that even true? The mama paid $20,000?
Yes, right. That's true. That actually happened, right, Samson?
And then he set the car on fire.
Tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the
they
car...
They didn't prove whether or not he set the car on fire, right? No, they couldn't.
And they didn't take... The craziest part, there was a glove left in the back of the car, and they're saying it was Kid Cudi's glove or whatever, but they didn't do any prints of that. And then the fingerprint that was inside the car, LAPD destroyed the evidence.
That's an important part, because one of the predicate acts of the racketeering conspiracy is that arson. So if they don't prove that, that's a problem for the prosecution. So that's where all of our opinions and all of the conjecture, but in that courtroom, they have to prove every element of every crime charge. So we heard about the arson, right, but if Samson was in the courtroom and said, to his opinion, they didn't prove that, that's good for Diddy, that's bad for the government.
No, there's no cameras. They don't. I mean, it's all kind of just hearsay, in a sense that he was in his house and that they lit his car on fire. They have no proof that he was there and lit his car on fire. That's just the hard part. If they had him on camera doing it, you're like, okay. Because honestly, that Cassie tape is the most explosive thing. Every time that plays in the courtroom, you know, you were asking about the jury earlier. Everybody in the room, it is this... It's so hard to watch him, the way he throws her on the ground, the way he kicks her.
Absolutely.
And then he stomps on her hip and then drags her.
I was furious seeing everyone's furious when they see that video. Yeah. So.
But she went back 2 days later, right?
Right.
But see, that's my point.
That's the pattern.
Everyone is in agreement that he was domestic.
Yes.
He was physically abusive to her. It was a domestic violence situation. Everyone. But that's not what he's on trial for.
Correct. That is correct. And the cycle of domestic violence is never a straight line. to Ariel's point, right? The cycle of domestic violence, there's so much that goes into what do I stay? Do I leave? Do I call the police? And it's extremely unfortunate, the cycle of domestic violence. But that video, as offensive and as grotesque as it is, that's not what this trial is about. That's not one of the crimes that he's charged with. The government's utilizing that to say, this is what he does when he doesn't get his way. So when she's telling you that she was forced to have sex with these men, she wasn't consenting, because if she didn't do it, this is what would happen. That's what they want the jury to believe. And the question is, the answer will be, will they or won't they? And that video was so difficult to watch as a man. That was absolutely horrible and should never happen to any woman ever.
Yeah, it's the most damning piece of evidence, because without that, we only know Puff from talk shows and the likable, you know, rapper entrepreneur. And I always think about this. Wouldn't it be interesting had that elevator door opened and Cassie got into it? We wouldn't have this
tape. We might
not
be here right now. We might not be here right now.
So it's kind of interesting, just in fate, in ways you believe God or whatnot, that elevator door was kept closed so it could be brought to the light in a way, you know? And so it's just very interesting to me, the timing of things. Like, if that door just opened right away, would we be here?
Okay, so I have a question. James, you have defended a lot of people in some really, really, really serious crimes. If you were the defense, what angle would you take to get your client off?
So first of all, you have to attack the credibility of the government's witnesses. And you can make the argument, you might not like my client, you might not like Mr. Combs, you might hate that video. I hate that video. He might be a bad guy. He might not be a good boyfriend. He might not be the kind of guy that you want your daughter to date, but that doesn't mean that he's involved in a racketeering conspiracy with sex trafficking. He can be a creep, but he doesn't have to be this. And I think if you put that out on the table and you say to the jury, we're not here for you to judge whether you like him or not. We're here to judge whether or not he's guilty of what the government alleges. And those are two very different measuring sticks. So I think if you speak to them and you apply yourself to their sensibilities, you're going to have women on the jury, you're going to have men on the jury that have daughters that are married, that are offended by what they see. But if you say, I agree with you, I'm offended by what I saw there, but that's not what this is about. So forget about that. Let's get into this. And if you can bring the jury over here, that's where the government doesn't want the jury. The government wants them over here fixated on that Cassie Hotel video. So if you're the defense attorney, get them away from that, get them over here, and get them to where Samson is saying, we were in Turks and Caicos and it was beautiful and we were having such a great time. And then you're standing up at the end and saying, where's the crime? They're trying to, you know, trick you. They're trying to get you to fixate on something that he's not charged with. Okay? And I think that's where you go.
I have another question for you. Despite it being the way it's supposed to be and what the rules are of being a juror, have you ever seen a jury sway and convict someone on any of your cases that you know you're allowed to speak about, that you know there was not enough evidence to prove that they were actually guilty of what the charges were, but because people just on the jury just didn't like the details of it, they convicted someone that it didn't prove?
So I think that's a subjective question where lawyers that try cases are going to say that about a case that they lost. I'm going to flip that. There is a concept called jury nullification. And the concept of jury nullification is you can present the law and the facts to a jury, and it can be obvious that the defendant is guilty of violating that particular law, and a jury can find that person not guilty. They can nullify all of it because they don't agree with the fact that the way the prosecution was built, etc. So a jury has extreme power to say to the government, we don't like this case. We reject it. This is none of your business. These are consenting adults, et cetera, et cetera. The jury can nullify a case and reject the government or the state's theory and say, you may have proven the elements of the offense, but we don't like this case. We don't like what you did here. We thought it was motivated by whatever reasons, political, you're looking because he's a high profile individual. And then in the same token, yes, I've seen cases where jurors don't like the defendant, don't like the lawyer. I mean, if you're a criminal defense attorney and you are cross-examining these witnesses, these female witnesses that are vulnerable, they're talking about things that are extremely personal, it's emotional, they're victims, and you come and you're very aggressive with them, you're going to turn off jurors that are going to say, I don't like that lawyer, and they can hold that against the defendant. There's so many variables that come into play here. It's very, very difficult to predict.
And James, okay? You bring up a really interesting point by that, because when you're in there, they assign, if they're going after a female, a lot of times they'll have Miss Westmoreland, the female, go after her because she's a bulldog. She's not nice. And like you said, a jury, oh, well, that's a female questioning a female like that. You know, or even I notice Xavier Donaldson, the black attorney, will sometimes address the men or even the black men, you know, and then Agnifilo, the white guy, will kind of go after the white guys. And it's interesting how, to your point, they're very strategic about who can be yelling at a witness, you know, and how that's perceived.
I do want to share one story. This actually happened to me in a murder trial that I did. And the state's witness was a jailhouse informant. And I remember I was much younger at the time trying that case. And they teach you in law school, to Samson's point, don't ever go after a witness until the jury gives you permission. Now, the jury's not speaking to you, but you're feeling the vibe. So in this particular case, this was a jailhouse informant. He was a snitch. He was a rat. He was all those things. And I also thought he was lying. So I started going through his criminal history that involved several sexual assaults. And I'm going through them and I go through the date. And I asked him, in this particular sexual assault, was the victim a man or a woman? I was trying to get under his skin. And he said it was a woman. And he made a smile. He knew what I was trying to do. I asked him another one, the same question. He said, a woman. I asked him about a third, and he said, neither. And I paused, and I said, what do you mean neither? And his response was, she was a prostitute.
What?
I looked at the jury.
Wow.
And the jury looked at me and said, get him. Go get this guy. He's a piece of shit. And I went absolutely, they gave me the permission to go after him. I looked at them. They wanted me to go after him. But if you do that in the wrong setting and you offend their sensibilities, they're not going to like you. And as a result, they're not going to like your client. So there's an art there. And it sounds like what Samson's saying is Diddy's team, who are very capable, are trying to make it so that when you have to be aggressive with the women, they have a female prosecutor doing it. If there's a racial component, they're having a black lawyer. They're doing all of that because they don't want to offend anybody's sensibilities.
Exactly.
And that's part of this. That's part of it.
That was a good story. Wow. Unbelievable, James. I can't even believe that.
Yeah.
Well, with that being said, I want to thank both Samson, Secret Service Sam, for joining us and being here today with us and giving his actual, his dialogue for what's happening in the courtroom and what it feels like and just giving us that perspective from the inside. So thank you, Samson. We love and enjoy all of your delivery, your commentary, and how fair you are in with your eyes. If you could allow the people to listen to where they can hear more and follow you and everything that you have going on.
Yeah, all of my socials are Secret Service Sam. So you can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and of course, TikTok is where my main following is.
Love it. Love it. And James, the amazing criminal attorney, the man with the plan. For people, if you commit a crime and you want the proper defense, James Leonard is the man to call. He'll hear you out. He'll talk you through the details. He'll see what the odds are. And one thing I can tell you is that he's an honest man, and he fights for his people. And that's just what it is. Can you let them know how they can follow you, how they can reach you?
Yes.
James, please.
I'm located in Atlantic City, New Jersey. I can be found on the web. I can be found on Instagram, J Leonard, LEONARD, JRESQ. And I appreciate that. I do want to say this to you, Ra, and to the ladies that are there. I think that voices like yours, Ra, and you coming on a platform like this and giving your opinion as a woman, and your opinion was very strong. It was your opinion. You weren't doing the politically correct opinion. I think we're living in a world now where voices like yours, platforms like these, we're seeing it with people like Cameron, who is putting his opinion out there. It might be polarizing to some. It might be refreshing to others. But having these voices, because previously, there was no platform like this. The only voice that existed was the traditional legacy media, CNN, Fox, you know, CBS, ABC. For all of the listeners out there and all of the viewers, if you have an opinion, share it. And you may ultimately change someone else's opinion. So, Ra, kudos to you for being that voice and being a voice for women. What you said here today, I think some will find very refreshing. Some may find offensive, but that's the beauty of the dialogue. That's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. People, you know, have their own opinion. But regarding the Diddy matter, the only opinion that matters is the consensus of those 12 people in the courtroom. What we think makes absolutely no difference. It's what those 12 people think in that courtroom. And it's going to be very interesting to see what they do when this is all said and done.
Again, I'd like to thank you both, Samson and James, for being here and having this conversation with us. The fellas have stepped out and it's just us girls.
Every time we have a discussion, you be like, yeah, what we gonna do? Okay, bye.
We don't care. On to the next topic.
We got some secrets and I'm still gonna protect him.
It's always black women who speak up first but get believed last.
When you go to the government, the NDA is not in void.
Yes. Do you feel like we ignore like red flags?
We ignored all the books of the flags.
When the smoke clear, you being ashamed and dirtified.
You can't tell you're black just because of your complexion. Shit, you believe that $100,000 is going to change the rest of your life? Mm-hmm. This is for you.